Hello, this is Craig Thomas from the University of Massachusetts Lowell doing the long view today for ESACAN. It's Thursday, October 5th, and I'm actually broadcasting over recording from Lawrence Community Works in Lawrence, Massachusetts. I have with me T. Luke Young and Andre LaRue, who are members of Lawrence Community Works, and David Turcotte, the resident green building expert at University of Massachusetts Lowell, here to discuss what exactly is going on in Lawrence, specifically with Lawrence Community Works and green building. So, Andre, I thought maybe you could do a little introduction as to what and who Lawrence Community Works is.
Great, thanks, Craig. Again, my name is Andre LaRue. I'm the Director of Neighborhood Planning at Lawrence Community Works, and we're a nonprofit community development corporation here in the city of Lawrence. We do a number of different things, but basically our goal is to rebuild the fabric of the city of Lawrence, both in physical terms as well as in its people terms, right? So we do a lot of organizing among residents and civic engagement work, as well as building the skills and resources that people need to get ahead. We are affordable housing developers. We also are developing a community facility, and I'll turn it over to T. Luke to talk a little bit more specifically, since he's a project manager in the real estate department, to talk about how we try to incorporate green technology into those projects.
I'm T. Luke Young, a real estate project manager for Lawrence Community Works, and I'm managing several affordable housing projects. And I want to speak a little bit about green technology in affordable housing, and then also discuss a little bit our community center and how we're incorporating green technology in that. In terms of affordable housing, of course, for us in Lawrence, having incomes much lower than the area median average, and the 23rd lowest incomes in the country, the poorest city in the state. We are attempting at every level to save costs for new homeowners, new families in Lawrence who are getting into the homeownership market. This is the primary reason we're looking at green technology, but of course, again, as a responsible community-based organization, we're interested and concerned with conserving natural resources, and we do that with our housing and parks as well.
I wanted to cut in because I know some people don't know a lot about what green building is. What is green building as far as your understanding is, T. Luke?
Green building, from our perspective, is using, wherever possible, green building materials, but at the same time also reducing energy consumption and thus passing on energy cost savings to the new homeowner. Those are the two main prongs in green building technology as far as we see it.
And as I said before, David Turcotte is here with us from the University of Massachusetts Lowell. David, I don't know if you had anything else to say about the more national trends of green building or other understandings that have come to be. Not that, you know, T. Luke, you don't have the right things to say, but I think that in some places different things happen and, different things that people aren't thinking about here. So, David, what else have you been thinking as we start this discussion?
Well, you know, green buildings, depending on who you're talking to and how they define it, could have different definitions. But one organization that's kind of helped develop, at least on the commercial sector, a kind of a national recognized standard is the United States Green Building Council. They have a voluntary LEED rating system that goes from basic certification up to platinum in four different levels. And so they look at it from kind of five perspectives, energy efficiency or renewable energy being one, and looking at material selection being two. But they also look at issues of indoor air quality, water consumption, and kind of site planning and how the structure kind of connects to the site. So they kind of will focus on those five areas, and you can accumulate points within their rating system within those 5 years, and that determines, you know, whether you qualify for LEED certification or to what extent you are green, you know, based on their definition and standard.
This is Craig Thomas again from UMass Lowell Center for Family, Work, and Community. I wanted to go back to T. Luke Young from Lawrence Community Works. I know that you had said generally what your theories are and your thoughts on green building. Now, more specifically, there are a few projects that you've done and that you are working on. Can you speak a little bit to what those are in Lawrence?
Absolutely, and I will add, before I get into it, that we are looking at other aspects of this five-point definition of green technology and green building in terms of low-impact design in our site development and indoor air quality, you know, to a certain extent. But again, our primary focus here as an affordable housing developer is cost for the new homeowner. And what we're doing on a couple of our projects, besides the LEED certification, which is a extremely high standard and can be cost prohibitive for a nonprofit, another standard at a lower level, but an important standard, I think, to consider for all new homes and rehabbed homes, if possible, is the Energy Star rating. And the Energy Star rating, and David could speak more to this, I'm sure, but is a rating that Conservation Services Group will certify a new home to have a certain level of energy efficiency, and that is ratcheted up every year. Generally, in general terms, it reduces the utility bills of the homeowner by up to 30%, which is critical for our members. We're a membership-based organization. We have about 1,700 members now and growing. So at the very least, our buildings are all ENERGY STAR rated. So right off the bat, we have a savings of 30% on utility bills for the homeowners. But wherever possible, we try to use green building technology, green building materials, such as Hardy Plank, which is a cementitious board for the exterior instead of vinyl or aluminum, recycled flooring materials, and other aspects in terms of where possible, we incorporate recycling materials. I just got a report back from one of my projects that, which is under construction now, Scurrito Homes, 10 units of new housing development that the report was in the last 2 months, they recycled 95% of the materials, and I was impressed by that, and I wish others could follow suit on that. So again, the ENERGY STAR rating, green materials where possible, also for health issues as well. But as a nonprofit housing developer, costs often get in the way of ideals, and that's something we're struggling with.
This is Craig Thomas again. It seems to me what you're saying is that oftentimes green building materials do work into the theories of affordable housing. I think a lot of people would be surprised by that, and surprised that green materials and ENERGY STAR ratings actually, by improving efficiency in houses, will bring down utility costs and will bring down people's general expected payments. Now, you said that it's worked out well for you. Have there been any major setbacks as far as what you've hoped to incorporate in some of your projects with the availability of green materials or what you found cost prohibitive specifically? Can you remember any of these?
Porous paving, for example, is a large, and porous paving essentially is a paving system, often a cementitious material, but other materials as well, that allows stormwater to run off into the ground instead of running off into the sewer system or the drain system. In Lawrence, it's a problem because it's a combined sewer drain stormwater system. So we're trying where we can to design our sites in a way that manages stormwater runoff. Unfortunately, asphalt is still much cheaper. Certainly, as we all know, it's subsidized by the government. It's part of the oil industry. And the costs are much less for asphalt than porous paving. That's something we've struggled with. The other aspect, and I think we're coming close to a breakthrough on this, thanks to some funding sources that I think we've identified, is to take it to the next step, which is to start to integrate photovoltaic cells, PV cells, on the roof. And I think we're close on this next project to obtaining almost full funding to do that. And what that would do is, combining with ENERGY STAR, which reduces the utility bills, as I discussed, the system that we're talking about putting on would essentially generate about $60 worth of electricity a month for each unit. So if if they're careful, they would not use more energy than that.
If you're just tuning in, this is Craig Thomas from the University of Massachusetts Lowell Center for Family, Work, and Community. I'm recording for The Long View on Thursday, October 5th from Lawrence, Massachusetts with Lawrence Community Works members Andre LaRue and T. Luke Young, as well as our resident green building expert from UMass Lowell, Mr. David Turcotte. David, T. Luke has just spoken a little bit about some of the things that Lawrence Community Works has encountered in incorporating green building into their housing units. Did that spark anything that you know about national trends as far as making it more affordable and easier for developers to include in housing, especially affordable housing?
Well, there is a national program that the Enterprise Foundation is supporting, and I don't know if you were, I think you were in the program, if I recall, correct? You've gotten a grant. Oh.
So, yeah. Yes, for our house, our community center, our house Center for Design and Technology, I believe we're in a collaboration with them.
Yeah, I thought I saw your name as one of the few organizations in Massachusetts that have qualified. It's a challenge nationally because of what has been mentioned, which is the cost factor. I mean, most affordable housing deals are very thin to begin with, and developers have struggled just to get the financing together to fund a traditional housing development. And so normally, and again, I'm not sure what your experience is here, but I'd be interested to hear how much additional upfront construction cost the green and healthy features contribute, because someone has to raise that extra money, even if it's 2 or 3%. And from what I've heard from talking to other people that are in affordable housing, it's generally anywhere from 1 to 3% additional upfront construction cost based on adding those green features to it. So I don't know if that's the same situation here.
T. Luke Young, responding to that, I couldn't give you a percentage, but for example, we had some quotes for adding PV cells, photovoltaic cells, to each unit, and there's a cost of about $17,000 per unit. We've identified some grant sources that would bring that cost down to $2,000 a unit. So it's very helpful. On other fronts, our budgets are so tight that any savings that we do find, we have to balance the idea of integrating green technology in with the need to continue to reduce sales prices for our members who are needing every cent of savings that they can to buy their first home.
Yeah, this is David Turcotte from UMass Lowell, and it just what you just said, T. Luke, reminded me of something that Craig said earlier about why is there this combination of green with affordable housing. One of the key, there's two key aspects to that, to why a lot of affordable housing developers really want to integrate green, is because, number one, on the operational end and on the energy efficiency end, it provides, you know, long-term savings. And even though it's an upfront cost, they're usually able to recoup that upfront cost because there's a short payback period, particularly on energy efficiencies. But the other thing is that historically, lower-income families have been living in probably the least healthy housing out there, and so there's an effort now to ensure that, you know, to raise the standard overall for affordable housings, to ensure that, you know, irregardless of a family's economic standing, that they should live in a high-quality, healthy home, and that's a lot behind the effort.
This is Craig Thomas again. Andre LaRue, you and I have been sitting here moderating to a certain extent a green building discussion, but that's not exactly what you do. And I know that as the planning department here at Lawrence Community Works, you have a lot of different things that you're working on and that you'd like to do. So this is Craig Thomas trying to moderate a discussion here on green building. Andre LaRue, you work here in the planning department at Lawrence Community Works, and you have a lot of different things going on that are related to this but are a little different. I wanted to sort of change the discussion a little bit and begin with some of the things that you wanted to add here.
Right. Well, I think what Dave was talking about is a good segue into what I do, which is a lot of the neighborhood planning piece of it. And I think the way that these development projects interface with the public space and with local government, and what we can do at a larger level, maybe a policy level at the local level, to figure out how we can incentivize this kind of development as much as possible. And from a neighborhood planning standpoint, it's also beneficial for housing to incorporate these features. I mean, Lawrence Community Works is always trying to create homes that are geared towards long-term affordability as much as possible, and they're beautiful and well-designed and made out of solid construction materials. And in a market like Lawrence, which has been sort of a weak market for a long time until the recent sort of boom in housing prices, it's been hard to develop attractive and high quality housing. So we want to show that it's possible to do that, and create some best practices around that and some high expectations about what we should do. We don't have to just put in the cheapest thing on a vacant lot that we're trying to rebuild. We can have something that's site sensitive and fits into the historic context of the neighborhood, use some low impact development in terms of the landscaping features, and connect it to green space throughout the neighborhood, so that we're looking at really a neighborhood or community wide effort to reduce overall impact. And again, T. Luke mentioned the stormwater, the combined sewer and stormwater system that Lawrence has. We're under an EPA, dictate if we can't separate that, to at least reduce impact as much as possible, basically have a net zero flow into the waterways that we have. And so we've worked with partner organizations like Groundwork Lawrence very, very effectively to help to create some community gardens in abutting alleyways, in some of our projects an overall landscaping design that will help sort of recharge the soil on the site, instead of having the stormwater filter on site as opposed to running off into the streams. Another thing that we're trying to do too is that we do a lot of work with mill owners and other property owners in terms of looking at the larger vision for the city and where we're trying to go. And I know that a number of those mill projects have been moving forward now, and many of them are trying to incorporate green technology. I mean, we have a terrific opportunity here in the city. We have 12 million square feet of mill space. We have acres, literally, of rooftops. I would love to see green rooftops throughout these mills when they get redeveloped. And I think there are one of the projects going forward is actually going to do that, have a partial green rooftop, the Monarch on the Merrimack, which is near the new train station. There's a number of other people working in the area on these issues, and really what we'd ideally like to try to work towards is figuring out how we can have a local fund that taps into, create some incentives for property owners who want to do redevelopment to tap into, to incorporate green features into it. I mean, there's the Mass Tech Collaborative is great, and I think that's where we get some of the funding for on these things, and we need to supplement it on the local level as well.
So as we wind down the 20-minute interview here on the Long View in Lawrence, Massachusetts with Lawrence Community Works, I want to ask you, Andre, to elaborate a little bit further about the neighborhood here that Lawrence Community Works works with. We talked about your green building projects, we talked about the national trends, and you've talked about what's for the future, but what is the neighborhood here?
Okay, well, we're a citywide CDC, but we do a lot of our development projects in a neighborhood called the North Common neighborhood. It's a very historic neighborhood that was created when the city was developed in 1846, and it's a very dense neighborhood. It's had some challenges over the years. So there was, at one point, 30% of the properties were vacant or abandoned. As recently as 1999, we've come a long way to eliminating those vacant lots in blight. Developed two new playgrounds in the neighborhood, including a 3-acre park along a river. We've cleaned up at least half a dozen alleyways, transforming some of them into community gardens and beautiful public space. Those alleyways represent 2.5 acres. And again, the more that we can create green solutions for these kinds of spaces that are that have been abandoned, that allow filtration of the stormwater and on-site, you know, reintroduction of native species, taking out invasive species, and it all fits into all this work. The built environment and the natural environment all fits into really what most people are familiar with as smart growth. And smart growth is basically the idea that we can rebuild a community, we can have a dense, vital urban community that's diverse, that offers a range of housing and recreation and commercial opportunities, that's a flourishing community, right? And what we at Lawrence Community Works in particular want to aim for is not just smart growth, but smart, equitable growth. Because when you talk about a diversity of jobs or housing opportunities, you're talking about a range of incomes, a range of backgrounds. You need to create a community that's truly welcoming. And I think we can do that. So we're sort of trying to re-engineer the city. And I know that we've tried to work a little bit with UMass Lowell in the engineering department and pulling in more folks from there, because partnerships are how this stuff happens.
All right, great. So this is Craig Thomas from the UMass Lowell Center for Family, Work, and Community, here with UMass Lowell's David Turcotte and Lawrence Community Works members Andre LaRue and T. Luke Young. Thanks, everyone, so much for this.
Thank you.
Thank you.